Diamondbacks baseball. Diamondbacks
baseball. And he corks one way back. And it is gone.
The D-backs BP show.
Fly ball to left. Hit pretty well by Lamb at the wall. It's gone.
Diamondbacks radio network.
There's a shot to center field. Parr on the run. Can't get it. He gets by him. All the way to the wall. Bounces more towards center. Marte turns second. He heads for third. Tony Parachica's racing into the plate. Here comes the throw. It's high. He is safe.
D-backs BP show.
Getting closer to the return of baseball. Tomorrow is report date, Mark 2, for summer camp at Salt River Fields and at Chase Field as the D-backs get ready for what we're hoping will be a kickoff to the 2020 season in about 3 weeks. Our technical director tonight is Luke Robbins with the television voice of the Arizona Diamondbacks, Steve Berthume. I'm Mike Farron. And Bert, a little bit more optimistic now as we get closer to the day when everybody starts getting tested for COVID and getting back to camp and some workouts.
My concern is that calling it summer camp makes the season sound like a Chris Farley movie. I expect David Spade to come walking through at some point. I get it's not spring, it's summer. I'm not sure I'm sold on the name.
Okay,
though,
so what would you suggest as a potential alternative?
As usual, Mike, I like to criticize and not offer solutions.
Oh, right. So you hadn't thought this through, is what you said.
It's a process that's worked for me relatively well. Yeah, you can't call it spring training. Summer camp is fine. It's fine.
It was actually camp? I think Jeff Sullivan, who used to write at Fangraphs and now works for the Tampa Bay Rays, that first suggested it. But MLB took him up on it, and so it's summer camp, and everybody's starting to show up tomorrow. Everybody should be in town, or just about everybody should be in town tonight, and testing protocol will get underway, and then workouts will start at Chase Field and at Salt River Fields on Friday and Saturday this weekend.
And we'll talk to Mike Hazen about that. The GM will join us in, about 15 minutes or so. That'll be good. That'll be cool.
Yeah, and I'm interested to see how they handle this because obviously it's going to be a little different than typical spring training in that, for the most part, once you get into game shape, there's going to be inter-squad games. There's a chance to potentially play some exhibitions at the end of it, but you're really looking at teams playing against each other and having kind of structured intra-squad games in an effort to get ready for the season, build up pitcher's arm strength, and get enough at-bats under your belt that you're ready to go for the year.
I know everything in this game is based on timing, and you can't really recreate that by facing your buddy in the backyard, or you can only hit against a pitching machine so often. It doesn't quite get you to where you need to be. But on the other hand, they've been essentially doing this for 3 or 4 months now, so I would think in some regard that would accelerate the process a little bit, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, especially over the last 6 weeks or so, as guys were told, hey, start getting ready. I mean, really the beginning of... Gosh, even the middle of May, I would think, was when guys were started to get ramped up a little bit and getting going in the hopes of getting going for a season this year. So they've had a little bit of time to build it, and I don't think it's going to be like we come into summer camp and guys are going to be throwing an inning or two innings and ramping their way up. I think they're probably at a little bit higher baseline to start from, at least from the pitcher's standpoint. And in, like you mentioned, for hitters especially, it's all about getting the timing down. So, I mean, it's just for every guy, it's going to vary a little bit, but there's probably enough time to get 30 or so plate appearances in whatever you do in an effort to get ready. And most guys will tell you 30 to 50 is where they need to be ready for a season.
So you've got your big leaguers, your 26-man roster will start at 30. They're sort of in one category getting ready. And then because we had minor league baseball officially canceled today, there will be no minor league season as we expected. You've then got another group of prospects and minor leaguers that are on their own, perhaps different programs. And I thought the thing that was most interesting about the D-backs 60-man player pool was it included 9 of the top 10 prospects, including Bryce Jarvis, this year's first-round pick. So you're really getting these guys up close and personal in a sense that they'll sort of get a major league feel for what's going on and be in that environment. Granted, it's going to be very different than anything anyone has ever experienced, but they're there and they're part of the mix, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think, they're going to, like most teams, what will end up happening is that they will have a group in the 30s. And we'll ask Mike Hazen a little bit about what their plan is to split them up, that will be working out at their main ballparks and then a secondary set. Not everybody will necessarily work out together. Some places I think they're going to put all 60 players or however many were recalled. Some places, some teams only recalled 40 some odd to start, and they'll add to it as they get, you know, into the season and want to get their prospects some work. So it just kind of depends on what each team is doing. But for the most part here with the Diamondbacks, the guys who, you know, either are going to be on the major league team or have a chance to make that opening day 30 will be working out of Chase Field, and there will be some other guys that are working out at Salt River. So it's a little bit divided in that. But we should mention, Bert, because I don't believe the rules came down before we were on the air last week, that one of the most significant ones in terms of the roster construction is what you mentioned. Opening day, they will have 30-man rosters. 2 weeks later, it'll be down to 28. And then the final 6 weeks of the season will be played with 26-man rosters. And remember, this was the year we were going to shorten up our September rosters anyway. We were just going to shorten them from 40 to 28. So it's a little bit backwards in this season in that the rosters are bigger to start with and smaller as we get down the stretch.
Well, I'm sure that that's a product of COVID-19 and the necessity of having guys standing by and ready. You're also going to add that up to 3-man taxi squad as well that can travel. You can take an extra 3 guys with you on the road. One of them has to be a catcher if you're going to take 3. But yeah, they're doing, I think, everything they can to provide depth and coverage at every position for every team, knowing that guys aren't going to come up with the coronavirus. We've already seen that. Players, I think, on just about every major league team have tested positive for it. And, you know, preparations have to be made in that regard, which is why we're starting with a player pool of 60.
Right. And I think to your point, too, that there's with no minor league season, especially for top prospects, there's a chance for guys to be able to work out. One top prospect who wasn't in that group was Christian Robinson. Mike Hazen on a conference call yesterday explained that one of the reasons why he wasn't included was that because he was never able to go home to the Bahamas during the start of this pandemic in March, that he is kind of exempt. The only place he can work out is Salt River because he's been here. So since he didn't return to his home country, they don't need to necessarily add him to that 60-player group, and he can still work out of the facility. So that's the 10th guy in that top 10 of MLB's prospects that didn't get added. Of course, you know, players could get released. You can add players over the course of the year. There are some roster manifestations that will happen over the course of a season, but that's it. The biggest news really from the roster announcement was shortly after the Diamondbacks roster was announced. Mike Leake announced that he was opting out of the 2020 season. The former ASU standout, who the Diamondbacks acquired in a trade from Seattle at the trade deadline last year, decided that he will not participate in the year. And while neither the D-backs nor Leake gave any public comment on why he made the decision, it's certainly understandable in the midst of a raging pandemic. And as somebody who lives in Arizona full-time, he has seen the number of cases rise here and certainly can understand why, despite the fact that he does not appear to have immediate health risks, at least not ones that he has discussed, why he might be concerned about playing this season.
Yes, he moved here several years ago before he even became a Diamondback, right? His father was paralyzed in an accident several years ago. I'm sure he has family concerns, and Mike has not said anything publicly. I really like the way Mike Hazen handled this yesterday. I was on that conference call, as were you, and we'll talk to Mike about that in about 5 minutes or so. Any guy that wants to tap out and not participate this year, this is something that has hit home with all of us, okay? Mm-hmm. It's in everybody's home. It affects everyone's family. So anybody that wants to tap out and not play, for me, gets a pass. Absolutely understood. No explanation necessary. I thought Ian Desmond was extremely articulate and well-spoken in his statement that he gave yesterday when he decided not to play for Colorado. Considering what we're facing, not only as a country, but as a planet, anybody that says, you know what, it's just there's too much risk here, I'm going to sit this one out, they get a free pass from me, absolutely no questions asked.
Yeah, two other players that opted out yesterday with the Washington Nationals, Ryan Zimmerman, whose wife is extremely pregnant and whose mother also deals with, I believe, MS. And Joe Ross, one of their starting pitchers, expected to be their 5th starter this year. Ross, whose brother Tyson was recently released by San Francisco, has not made a public comment, but it is worth noting that his father is a pediatrician and his mother is an ER nurse in Oakland. Yeah. And so you have to wonder how much that played a role in his decision to not play this year. As for the Diamondbacks with filling the leak void, and we'll talk a little bit about this with Mike in a bit, but it would seem to clear a path for Merrill Kelly to move back into the rotation or to claim that fifth spot. Not that he hadn't been assured of it before, but it seemed like he would be the guy that was on the outside looking in. But Kelly would seem to be the most likely fifth starter for the D-backs this season.
I totally agree, and there's certainly other candidates. You've got John DePlantier. Alex Young was terrific. You could put Taylor Clark in there, any number of guys. But we saw an up-and-down year for Merrill last year, started off pretty well, had some bumps in the road for much of the summer. But I thought, Mike, somewhere around 9-10 starts remaining, I think you saw a very different Merrill Kelly out there toward the end of the year, the last 6 weeks or so. He had a different mound presence about him. His velocity was up. He was much more aggressive out there. And I think, 4-1 in five September starts, 6-2 in his last nine. It wasn't against Murderer's Row every day. There's a couple of starts in there against the Padres when they had essentially punted on the season. So you don't look at the numbers and say, oh, well, that guy should be your number three or two or one starter. But I thought Merrill really adjusted to his overall adjustment of, hey, I'm a major leaguer now. I belong here. I can get these guys out. I think it took him longer than he realized to get there mentally.
Yeah, I think in talking to him, he was battling a couple of mechanical things too and finally got into a good rhythm with that down the stretch last year. To your point, a 2.18 ERA in September. If you start to look at some of the advanced numbers, it was more than a strikeout an inning, and the quality of contact against him wasn't particularly good. So for opponents, those are all encouraging things. And if he can build on that coming into this year, a guy who was supposed to have very, very good command as he came back from Korea. You can see him potentially taking a step forward. He was basically a league average starting pitcher last year in terms of run prevention, and so that's a nice person to have as depth. And you mentioned some of those names that could fill in behind him, and add Corbin Martin to that mix too, who was part of the Zach Greinke trade, who's recovering from Tommy John surgery. You would think that he could be part of it as well. So the Diamondbacks certainly have starting pitching depth. I mean, we talked about that last week, that's one of the strengths of this group. So even with Mike Leake out, you would feel that they are in a good position to be able to compete in the rotation.
I do wonder, I think they sort of kicked around the idea, and Torrey mentioned this the other day, of starting with a six-man rotation. I'm not sure that was set in stone, but I wonder if this alters that plan at all. We'll ask Mike Hazen about that in a few minutes.
Yeah, and I'm sure that the schedule will probably have something to do with that too, and we're not anticipating that until next week, most likely. Mike Hazen, as Steve said, the general manager of the Diamondbacks, will join us next. This is the D-backs BP Show. Mike Hazen, Executive Vice President and General Manager of the Diamondbacks, scheduled to join us in just a little bit. We'll also visit with Joe Davis, the television voice of the Los Angeles Dodgers, in a little bit. Might as well start previewing the National League West. Bert, one of the quirks of this schedule this year is that there is a better chance of you playing your World Series opponent than there is of playing your first round opponent in the playoffs.
How does that work?
Well, because you're playing, your games are going to be against your division and the division in the other league that's in your region. So you play in the Diamondbacks case, the NL West and the AL West. But say you win the National League West and you're playing the champion of the National League Central, you'll have never played them this year.
Yeah, that's weird. I like the separation between the leagues. I'm not a huge interleague guy anyway. I like that special feeling that we had when we were kids and the World Series came around and two teams that had never seen each other are suddenly playing for the whole thing. I kind of missed that whole dynamic.
Well, now we're going to get it for the National League playoffs.
Yeah. So that's something. So that's kind of cool.
So we got that going for us.
I really think long term they need to do a better job of geographically aligning the divisions or the leagues. And I know this will maybe come with expansion, but the whole travel plan, just forget about the COVID. It just makes sense in general. Let's play the American League West and AL East, NL East, figure that out and try and give the players a break, at least in travel, and create more regional rivalries.
Well, I think to do that, you could really just completely reimagine the leagues. I mean, that's probably the right way to do it.
Let's do it, man.
I'm all for that. I think that's one of those creative ideas that should come down the pike, and that I would not be surprised if when we get to expansion in a couple of years, that we would end up having that as well. I mean, that's another part that's going to come up. I think probably, by 2025, I would not be surprised if you see us expanding into a couple more teams in Major League Baseball. I mean, they're getting closer to getting the Oakland Stadium situation figured out. They're not necessarily closer with Tampa Bay, but That's something that's been speculated for a while, and I would not be surprised if we start looking at that being a possibility coming up.
And that's also maybe the quickest way for owners to get some money back, as they've done in the past, that when they have a lockout or a strike or a labor stoppage of any kind, you can add a couple of teams and suddenly here comes a whole bunch of money.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's absolutely true. You know, while we're waiting for Mike, did you get a chance to read the Jason Stark piece from about 10 days ago in talking about that and where baseball is likely headed over the next couple of years just as a result of this? I mean, baseball was in
– Jason has been at the top of his game the last couple of weeks.
Well,
I mean,
the guy's in the Hall of Fame, so, like, he's always at the top of his game.
But as soon as they said, okay, play ball, Stark just started typing. It's been unbelievable.
So – one of the things that he brought up was that as a result of this, I mean, obviously baseball's been in a little bit different situation than the NBA and the NHL in that they never got their season started. So the revenue has been $0, whereas those leagues finished, what, 70 to 80% of their schedule, right? And somewhere around there. And so most of what they were going to get in terms of in-person and television revenue had come in. But the fact that it impacted baseball when it did is going to have a profound impact, I think, on the sport going forward. Not just coming up in, say, free agency this winter or in trades that teams have to make, but over the next couple of years and with a collective bargaining agreement looming. And I know we talked about that over the course of the negotiations between the owners and the Players Association to get the 2020 season off the ground. This is something that is, you know, really worth keeping an eye on, because I think the landscape of the way things are changing over the course of the next several weeks or the next several years is going to be very interesting to watch.
I know we've heard Ken Kendrick talk about the idea that it's certainly more than reasonable to expect that attendance in 2021 will be significantly less than it normally is, because people aren't going to be all that thrilled about going and sitting in a 50,000-seat stadium with people who may or may not be wearing masks. I mean, we can't project down to next April or May, but it certainly would seem reasonable to expect attendance would be sluggish at least the first half of next year, coming off a terrible financial season this year.
Yeah, and I think also when you're looking at the state of the economy too, I think that's reasonable to think that that's a possibility as well.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we're dealing with a lot of job loss at this point, and people, we don't know exactly when everybody is getting back to work.
Yeah, we're worried about people being able to pay mortgages and rent, and the disposable income is certainly not what it normally is.
Right. So, I mean, I think those are all things that you know are going to impact baseball going forward. As I mentioned, we're going to talk to Dodgers play-by-play announcer Joe Davis in just a little bit to preview the National League West. We'll get into the Dodgers, who I don't know if you've heard, Bert, but they've been pretty good over the last 7 years. I know they're one of your favorite teams to talk about.
That whole National League Division Series didn't quite work out so well last year, but that's okay.
At least you're holding your hat on that, yeah.
They won 106 games, and they're loaded, and they have a whole bunch of studs coming up through their minor league system to replace guys who may or may not be leaving. So they're business as usual. They got their TV deal figured out, so Dodger fans in L.A. can finally watch the games on TV and hear Joe and Oral, and that means they don't have to watch Bob and I as we make the occasional snide comment about the Dodgers, but that's okay. You have fun with it.
Yeah, so we'll talk a little bit about that. And over the course of the next couple of weeks, our plan is to you know help get you ready for the season and look back at some of the look at some of the teams that were the Diamondbacks are going to be competing against this year. So Padres made a trade today too. Jorge Mateo acquired from the Oakland Athletics. He was a former top prospect in the Yankees organization. So we'll see whether or not he has an impact on them. Speedy guy, can play center field and shortstop. So the Padres do like to make trades. For sure. Joining us now, it's been a busy last couple weeks for him, for sure. The Executive Vice President and General Manager of the Arizona Diamondbacks, Mike Hazen, is on the line with us. Mike Farron, Steve Berthiaume, how are you?
Hi, guys. How you doing? Sorry, I'm a few minutes late.
No worries. I imagine you had one or two other calls to make or take.
No, I was just yelling at my kids. So, no phone calls.
Would this be about, I've heard about the Hazen Olympics. Is that still a thing?
The Hazen Olympics got cut short abruptly, unfortunately. So, we're in a holding pattern. Yes.
Go ahead.
Sorry. My oldest son was in the lead, and that was going to be for a dog. He was playing for a dog I am against getting a dog right now. And so so I have sort of sabotaged the Olympics for the time being.
So but, there was a Hazen Olympics meant to entertain everyone during the sort of lockdown, and it's just fizzled out midway through, or you found a way to sort of snuff it out?
Well, I was hoping we were going to be locked down for a couple of days, weeks, turned into months, kind of ran out of events, didn't want to get a dog, that's kind of how it went. The scoreboard is actually still on the wall. My youngest reminded me that I'm still in second place, but I reminded him that we're not getting a dog.
I always thought of you as a man of high integrity. To think that you would sabotage your own family Olympics over a dog is pretty remarkable, Mike.
I mean, it's already six of us at each other's throats here every day with not much to do, staying quarantined. Adding a dog that is going to,
bring
go
joy
all over my house on top of that. The kids go, we'll take care of it. We'll take care of it. By day four, I will be taken care of.
What were the events in the Hazen Olympics?
Oh, boy. We had a baseball throwing accuracy contest. My wife was upset with me because we put the nets too far away. So she felt like we did a poker tournament. We did a 3-point shooting contest. We did what else did we do? We were going to do badminton. That kind of fizzled out. They didn't like that. We did bocce. So we did a bunch of lame stuff. We were going to do a road race and a bike race, but those are the two that we still haven't gotten around to yet.
I'll see. There's still a chance for you to if you were to win, what would you get? What was your prize? Peace and
my
quiet?
Prize was I have to buy everybody else a prize. That was my prize.
That's good planning right there.
It seems like you got taken to the cleaners on this one. So, we're visiting with Mike Hazen, the Executive Vice President and General Manager of the Diamondbacks. All right, tomorrow is intake day, first day for everybody to report for summer camp. Mike, could you give us just a sense of what tomorrow is going to be like and what you guys are anticipating over the next, say, 60 hours?
Not really. Is that a bad answer?
Can you explain to us why it's tough to tell you?
Yeah. Now, look, the next couple of days are, when people hear the word report, they assume activity. That's not the case, right? Report is just being in the city. Now, majority of our players have already gone through the intake screening and have already reported and are already here. Most of them have been here. So we were able to get MLB opened it up on Saturday for us to get started. So we've been able to do a lot of that because most guys are in the city. So tomorrow's the day that they have to report by. Yes, we're going to knock out a lot of the screening. In order for them to participate, they have to clear the screening. So that's going to take about 24, 48 hours. But it's been pretty good so far, about 24 hours. So really, we're looking at Friday. So the next couple of days, because we've knocked out the majority of our intake screening, I'm imagining are pretty light. The guys that have already cleared, so the guys that would have been, were screened on Saturday, Sunday, whatever, and have already cleared, those guys can still do what we were doing prior to the agreement coming across or spring training starting. And so they can still do individualized workouts. So we'll still have guys at Chase working out, light workout, but they're still informal, small groups, no sort of opening of spring training. And then Friday will be the day when it's all systems go. So on Friday, it will look a lot like a normal day, I would imagine, other than, we've tried to ramp up pretty aggressively pre. So guys like Robbie Ray have been throwing fairly aggressively twice a week. We're hoping, we're going to be in positions to start things that you would normally see in spring training, probably about a week to 10 days ahead, I would think, for some guys, not for everybody. And so you're probably looking at things like live batting practice, and we'll get into scrimmages or inter-squad games here, probably in fairly short order.
Mike, you've got 9 of your top 10 prospects, according to most of the list, on the 60-man pool, with the exception of Christian Robinson, and you explained why he wouldn't be available. What's the thinking there with having so many in the mix, and how does their process maybe differ from some of the big league guys?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you're going to get to separate out the nine of our top 10 prospects. You know, those guys are at different stages of the development. So there's certain guys on there that are major league ready or depth ready right now. A guy like Dalton Barshow, you know, he's certainly one of our top prospects, but you know, there would have been every, guess that somebody could make that he was going to impact our major league roster this year. And I don't see why that won't be the case, in a shortened window. So there's different groups like that. So guys like Perdomo and Barshow that were moving towards sort of the upper end of our system. And then there's guys on the lower end that I would be a little more skeptical that you're going to see in a D-backs uniform this year. Look, the balance with the roster was we looked at a normal year. How many guys do we typically use? Well, roughly somewhere between 45 and 50. So, you know, we put 50 plus guys on that roster that are going to serve the major league depth in a lot of ways. Make sure the team is protected, injury protection. Obviously we've had one player removed already. But what were we going to do with those last couple of spots? Well, in the case that we don't get player development reps this year, if we don't have a fall league or we don't get an instruction league for whatever reason, you know, it's really hard for Major League Baseball teams, especially one in our position that relies on our minor league system, to go a full year. Corbin Carroll going a full year without getting any at bats, that was pretty tough. So we try to balance that out. You know, we try to accomplish both. Now we'll make changes to that 60-man roster as we take on injuries. We will have some ability to maneuver, but that's why we did what we did at the bottom of it.
We're visiting with Mike Hazen, Diamondbacks general manager, here on the D-backs BP show. Mike, you mentioned having one player off the roster already. That's Mike Leake, who opted out of the 2020 season. From a baseball standpoint, what's your feeling now about where the starting pitching depth stands? Obviously, that was something that looked like a great strength coming into March. How do you feel about where you stand now?
A little minus one. Right. I don't really know yet. I felt really good about it. I don't think there's a lot of teams that are walking in with plus or minus seven starting pitchers into a season. Good ones. Now we'll have six. You know, a couple factors. We do have a number of upper level arms, Widener, Dupe, Riley Smith. That group of guys, you know, sort of the group of guys that Alex Young emerged out of last year. Wouldn't be surprised if that happens again. You know, I think, you know, even below that, we have a couple other guys that we really like that are probably a little more of a stretch. And then, you know, Corbin Martin, we're hopeful that Corbin Martin's going to be facing hitters hopefully in August, early August. And, you know, not talking about like BP sessions and things like that, but in games. And so I would hope that at some point during August, he would also become an option for us. So I still feel like we have some good options. But as you know, I mean, we can go through starting pitching at this level pretty quickly.
Corbin Martin, Tommy John surgery last July. So that's pretty impressive. That's what, 13, 14 months coming back from that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mike, do you think
he's going to be in a pretty good spot, I think. Everything's gone very, very well with his rehab.
That's great news. How about Luke Weaver? Has this, I don't want to call it a layoff, but I guess that's what it is. Has this helped him at all, hurt him? What do you think?
That's a good one. I don't know. I would imagine the rest has been fine and been helpful. You know, where he was at, I know in spring training, he didn't have his best outings in spring training, but we anticipated that with the layoff. And I think from a fine-tuning pitch-making standpoint, we left spring training healthy, so I would imagine that we're still, you know, in that same spot, and everything we've gotten so far and monitoring his workouts, we're still in that same spot. I think the fine tuning and the pitching, the missing of innings, I think that could hurt him, much like it would any pitcher. I think with his extended layoff that it could be semi-problematic for him early. But hopefully not, you know. I mean, we'll see what he looks like when he comes in and we watch him throw. And, you know, unfortunately, everybody's probably, I mean, I haven't really counted it out yet. I can't imagine guys are getting more than three outings in spring training, if they get that. So we're going to fire up pretty quickly.
And Mike, before we let you go, obviously this is going to be an entire challenge this season in trying to play during a pandemic. And I'm just curious, as if you were advising fans or those watching the game or listening to the game, how optimistic should we be that this can both get off the ground and get finished over the course of this next 3 months?
You're probably asking the wrong person. And Mike, as you know, I'm a very optimistic guy.
Well, I know you are. That's why I wanted to get your take, Mike.
That's why I saved it for last.
I'm generally a ray of sunshine most days. Would you agree with that? Yeah, I agree with that. That would be my nickname on Players Weekend if they let me wear a T-shirt.
Sunshine Hazel.
Mr. Sunshine. I'm fairly optimistic here, and I'll tell you why. I think once we get within the screening, the testing, the sort of bubble, it's not a bubble, guys can go home and things like that, but you know, the education piece to it that we're going to undertake with regard to what you're doing when you're away from the field, we know what we're going to be doing when we're at the field, the minimizing the spread of anyone that tests positive. Look, guys are going to test positive. They already started, you know, it's already happened. So it's probably going to happen again. How do we minimize the spread so it's not getting to everybody else? There's a lot of very strict procedures underneath the hood that we're going to have to deal with on a day-to-day basis. How we travel, where our hotel is, how we eat, when we eat. Those things are all changing. And that is all due to try to limit, you know, even if somebody were to get sick or to come down with the virus, that doesn't spread and it doesn't stop. So I'm very confident as long as we can all adjust our behaviors off the field. And look, life is life. We all have to go to the grocery store. You have to go do those things. But being safe about it, wearing masks all the time, extremely important for us to be able to come in healthy every day. And that goes for me, and it goes for the players, and it goes for the coaches, and it goes for the clubhouse guys, and it goes for the medical people. We all need to play our part in this. And I think if we do, you know, I think we have a decent chance. But I'm not a medical expert, and we don't know, but I'm hopeful. We certainly, and I know everybody probably listening, and you guys, everybody misses the game. Mm-hmm. And it's been hard not being able to watch and participate in baseball. So hopefully we can bring that to the fans here and keep it going.
Mike, we appreciate the time. I think we should get you a mask with a giant sun on it just to show off your disposition. I think that'd be great for you to go to fries with
any suggestions you have for what you'd like to see on my mask.
I want to see you walking the dog after Charlie wins the Hazen Olympics.
Fine. I will send in a picture when that happens. Don't wait by your phone.
Thank you, Mike. Stay safe.
All right, guys. All right.
Mike Hazen, general manager of the Diamondbacks, will visit with Dodgers broadcaster Joe Davis next. This is the D-backs BP show.
Diamondbacks baseball. The D-backs BP show. Diamondbacks Radio Network.
Just about 3 weeks or so from opening day for the 2020 season, and the Diamondbacks will be trying to end the 7-year run of the Los Angeles Dodgers atop the National League West. And joining us now is a man who would prefer that the Diamondbacks didn't do that. He is the television voice of the Los Angeles Dodgers. He is the last time I saw Joe Davis, Bert, he was taking a giant bite out of a pork chop in my backyard. But
and you took that picture and circulated it all over the WWW.
It did, right? On the internet. Hi, Joe. Was your favorite part of that Ken Korak, like, photobombing you in the background?
That accented it nicely, didn't it?
How are you, buddy? How's the fam?
Doing all right, guys. It's so good to talk to you. Yeah, we're going to get this season going, and that's great. But the bummer of it all is that I'm still not going to see any of you guys.
I know. Yeah, the Mike Farron Cactus League cookout has become, I think, the hottest event on the social calendar baseball-wise, wouldn't you say?
We're going to have to start turning away non-broadcasters. He keeps tweeting out pictures of it. It's going to leak into the public, and
everybody's going to want a piece. Everybody's going to want to come take a bite of your pork chop,
Mike. It's quite an event. It's quite an event.
Just a reminder that Bert was the one who brought somebody who wasn't a broadcaster this year, so he's already exposed us to the outside
world. I brought my neighbor who wanted to meet you. He wanted to meet Mike Farron.
He wanted to meet Joe Davis. That was the
well. Who doesn't?
Joey, let's talk some Dodgers. This is obviously a team that had high expectations coming into the year after a disappointing playoff loss. But I'm curious your overall take on the depth of this group compared to the last 3 years.
Yeah, you know how it is. I think for any team, before the season starts, everybody thinks they're great. But pretty much the consensus coming out of that clubhouse first time around in spring training was that this was the most talented group that they've had. Even factoring in 2017 when they were really, really special, I think they just felt like adding Mookie Betts and David Price, a low-key, really good signing, moving from the American League to the National League. And then guys like Kershaw and Jansen, who put in serious work in the offseason, went up the drive line, did things they had never done that were turning heads in spring training, and they were looking for bounce-back seasons from. So there was a lot of optimism, even relative to what there usually is in Dodger camp.
Joe, what do you think that says about Clayton Kershaw that at this point in his career, he packed a bag, went to driveline, did the work, did the analytics, and learned how to get better? What does that tell you about the kind of person and player he is? That's unbelievably impressive to me for a guy that's accomplished all he has at this point in his career and to still work like that.
I'm with you, Bert. And I think he would be the first to tell you that 2-3 years ago, he would have said no chance. 2-3 years ago, he was very stubborn. And I don't think you become what he's become without being somewhat stubborn. But he's realized that, you know, as a 30-year-old, he's not doing the same kinds of things he was doing as a 22, 23, 25-year-old. And so he has seen the reasons to adjust. You know, it's funny we say that. It's like the league making him adjust because now his ERA is 2.8 instead of 2.6. His numbers are still really good, but he sees ways to get a little bit better and to pitch at the highest levels of the game for a little bit longer. And he's opened up to all that, you know, advanced analytics, all the things that the Dodgers make available to him. He's become much more of a sponge to that as these years have gone on.
Yeah, he wasn't the only Dodger that went to driveline this winter either. The other was Kenley Jansen, and I'm curious. We saw it was a real struggle for Jansen at times last year especially, but I'm curious what you saw from him in the spring.
He was really fired up about what he brought back from driveline. I remember seeing him in November, which would have been just like a month after the regular season ended, and he had just come back from one of his first trips there. And he was like a little kid, you know, raving about it, how excited he was. And him, along with Alex Wood, who's back with the Dodgers, a few other guys, they all raved about it so much that the Dodgers hired a guy from driveline that was one of the primary guys up there working with them. Dodgers hired him away from driveline to make him a regular part of the organization. So that's how highly these guys think of what's going on up there. And I don't think, you know, back to your original question, I don't think there was a guy that was more fired up about what he learned up there than Kenley Jansen.
Talking to Joe Davis from Dodgers TV. Dodger fans, Joe, will actually get to see your broadcast now. You guys got that worked out on the cable side.
You knew he was going to dig at you.
No, it's not a dig,
Joey.
It's good news. I'm just upset that all the Dodger fans won't be watching the Diamondbacks broadcast because they enjoy it so much.
You're gonna lose a chunk of audience, and they're gonna say, "This is weird. Why are there nobody at the games?"
They all left in the seventh inning, Joe.
Like.
But I forget who wrote this, but I thought it was kind of funny. Not only did Dodger fans actually get to see the games, now they get to see Gavin Lux, and this is a guy we've heard a lot about. What did you see from Gavin Lux at Camelback this spring?
Yeah, I've told a few people, he has all the raw tools to be an absolute superstar. The obvious stuff of what he's done in the field, you see what he did in AAA, see what he did coming up through the minors, did some good things in his first month in the majors, but you combine that with his personality, he's as down-to-earth of a guy as you're going to find. He's a good-looking young dude who's going to be in Los Angeles. Now, he's got the chance to be just if things pan out the way the Dodgers hope on the field, a star of stars.
Joe, who do you feel like is the Dodgers' biggest threat in the West? We're trolling for compliments here.
There's one correct answer, by the way.
The Giants?
Oh, I'm so sorry. We're out of time. We have some lovely parting gifts for you, Joe.
In all seriousness, who do you think is the team that in – I mean, listen, weird stuff is going to happen in a 60-game season, right? Like Bert and I were talking about it last week. Man, like the idea of having a sprint is actually kind of exciting. And we have seen where the Dodgers haven't been in position to win the division over 60 games pretty frequently over the course of the last 5 years. So who's the biggest threat to them in your mind in the division?
Yeah, you know what I think it is, guys. I've heard people ask, does this help or hurt the Dodgers, the shorter season? I don't think it does anything to the Dodgers, but I think it helps everybody else. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, I guess it hurts the Dodgers, right? It gives you a better chance that something crazy can happen and, you know, that somebody comes up and takes the division title from them. I've heard a lot of people say San Diego could be a sneaky threat with a really good bullpen and the way that we kind of imagine these games being managed over a 60-game season that could play. So San Diego, I really do think Arizona. I know you guys were excited about what you were seeing during the first version of spring training, and internally there was a lot of optimism about what the Diamondbacks were putting together. I don't like the Rockies. I don't like the Giants. So I really do think that Arizona and San Diego both, especially in a 60-game season, can pose threats.
Yeah, I think, Joe, one of the Dodgers' great strengths is that they just wear you down over 162. Mm-hmm. There's just so much talent there. And as Mike said, maybe it doesn't manifest itself as quickly or become as dominant over 60 as it does over 162. But for me, that's been a big reason why they've won so many consecutive division titles is they just wear you out over 6 months.
Yeah, the depth has been a calling card of the organization since Andrew Friedman took over. And do you get to see that depth manifest over 60 games like you would 162? Now, on the surface, you'd say no. Who knows with you know, guys testing positive for COVID and how that comes into play, how depth kind of gets redefined the way you need depth, depending on what kind of numbers of positive tests we see in individual teams. If the Dodgers happen to get hit with the bug, particularly hard, maybe the depth shows up there. I mean, you hate to think about that scenario, but I think there are still ways where the depth in the organization still really does prove to be a big deal.
Hey, Joe, before we let you go, I'm kind of curious, and this is a more personal one than one that applies to the Dodgers per se, but today Minor League Baseball announced that it would not be having a 2020 season, and the president of Minor League Baseball, Pat O'Connor, said that the face of Minor League Baseball is going to change significantly over the course of the next 3 years probably, and there are going to be some franchises that don't make it as a result of not playing games. As a former Minor League broadcaster, I want to ask you the question that J.J. Cooper was asking on Twitter today. What has Minor League Baseball meant to you?
I don't think I would be where I am without Minor League Baseball. You know, the opportunity to go do a game every single day for three seasons that I was there when relatively not many people were listening, and I could make some mistakes that I couldn't get away with at a bigger level, or I could try some things that I wouldn't want to try out if I was doing, say, a national game or doing a major league game. It's just the ultimate, I don't know if proving ground is the right term for it, but just the ultimate place to go and get reps and find out who you are as a broadcaster. And anybody that wants to get into this business that I talk to, even if they're not a baseball guy, they don't see themselves as a baseball announcer, I still say go do Minor League Baseball just because of the wonderful opportunity to be behind a microphone every single day. And I know that people in other jobs within Minor League Baseball feel the same way about what Minor League Baseball provides. So it's a really sad thing looking not just at this season, but just kind of the overall picture of where Minor League Baseball is moving forward.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think what you said about getting a chance to go someplace to make mistakes, boy, isn't that the biggest thing that helps you get better in any job is being able to screw up.
No doubt.
Learn from that. So, Joey, my friend, we greatly appreciate your time. What are you cooking tonight? Or what did you cook tonight?
You know what? Wife made some turkey bolognese in the crock pot. It was really good.
Got to follow really? Joe on Instagram to see his cooking escapades too. So
you foodies, you crack me up.
Oh, Joe can cook, man. Joe's the best.
Well, we know he can eat. We have the photos.
That's true. It's been documented.
Thanks, Joe. We'll talk soon.
Okay, guys. Great to talk to you.
Dodgers television broadcaster Joe Davis joining us. We will wrap this edition of the D-backs BP show next.
Diamondbacks baseball. The D-backs BP show. Diamondbacks Radio Network.
Good news is, Burr, we'll have at least a couple more of these shows before we get to opening day, which should be around. We don't know officially yet. I think it'll be either July 23rd or 24th.
I thought we were going to continue the show and it would simply preempt the game.
Yeah, well, that's what we told you.
Oh, well, okay. That is good news, Mike.
So we'll be able to continue previewing the Western Division foes the Diamondbacks have and get you updates from summer camp, which I don't know.
It still sounds like one of those David Spade movies, doesn't it?
It's just like...
If David Spade shows up at spring training / summer camp, there could be trouble.
Bert, are you teaching the astronomy course this year or...
Oh, boy. Summer camp. No, I'll be in a canoe in the pool.
Brindley will be teaching the indoor kids.
It'll be like Meatballs, Bill Murray.
Are you ready for the summer? So we'll continue to monitor that. And obviously this weekend workouts will get started. The schedule says for July 3rd. So this coming weekend. Actually, no, wait. July 3rd? Wait. July. Help me out with the days, Bert. Yeah, 3rd.
What do you
need? 3rd is Friday, right?
Friday is the 3rd.
The 4th I'm not good with
is
math.
Saturday.
Thank
That's
you.
When they do the fireworks.
Hey, you know what? Let me just say, as a kid, I loved fireworks. And as now the owner of two dogs, I hate fireworks.
Yeah, Jon Snow is not a fan of fireworks here in the neighborhood either.
George the dog is especially terrified of it. And they have been going off in our neighborhood pretty frequently over the last week, which...
Yeah, I know. I don't know what they're doing.
In the words of Phillies manager Joe Girardi,
it's not what you want.
it feels good to laugh again. Baseball hopefully on its way back, and we will be back with you next Tuesday for another edition of the D-backs BP show as we continue to get ready for this 2020 sprint of a season. Now for our technical director, Luke Robbins. For Steve Berthium, I'm Mike Farron. Thanks for joining us again for another edition of the D-backs BP show on 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.